Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Coulson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Thanks for joining me today, Rob.
Hi, Steve. It's a pleasure.
All right. A lot is going on this week, as in previous weeks. Russia appears to have started pulling back military units that had moved into Crimea and close to the Ukrainian border near the Donbass. Also, tensions with European countries, the European Union, and the United States have been heightened by evidence that the Russian military intelligence agency known as the GRU, or GRU, was behind a deadly explosion in the Czech Republic back in 2014. But I want to focus on the situation surrounding Alexei Navalny and his organizations. Big development today that we'll get back to later. But some of the background again. Navalny returned to Russia in January from Berlin, where he had spent about 5 months in treatment and recovery from a near-fatal nerve agent poisoning that he blames on President Vladimir Putin. In early February, Navalny was sentenced to serve 2.5 years in prison over a parole violation claim that he says is absurd. And on March 31st, he declared a hunger strike in prison, accusing his jailers, that's the Russian state, of deliberately harming his health, and he demanded to be seen by his own doctors. Now, Navalny announced on Friday, this past Friday, that he will gradually end his hunger strike, a process he said would take about 3 weeks. He has not been seen by his doctors, but they were given information about his condition by civilian doctors who evaluated Navalny last week. And based on that information, his doctors urged him to end his hunger strike, saying that if he kept it up, he would be dead very soon. They also said he must be transferred to a good civilian hospital in Moscow, but there's no word on whether that might happen. Now, 2 days earlier, last week, tens of thousands of Russians came out again for protests in support of Navalny and against Putin and his government. This was on the day of Putin's annual address to the nation. And to me, these developments suggest that the standoff between the state and, I guess to use an older phrase, those who don't agree, may be set to continue into the summer as the parliamentary elections that must be held by September 19th approach. Rob, what's your take from the latest developments?
Well, definitely the standoff is going to continue and probably intensify in ways that it's hard to foresee now. But I don't know. My feeling is that Navalny's supporters and Navalny himself must be a little bit disappointed by the latest protests, which I thought were rather small and definitely were smaller than the numbers of people who signed up on the website saying that they would be willing to come out and protest. I think I've talked about this in past appearances on your show. It really raises the question of whether Navalny did the right thing by coming back so early in January with the elections 9 months off. We're talking really about Navalny himself. The protests have become extremely personalized. Nobody's talking about the elections. There's months ahead for the government to intimidate potential candidates from running at all. It really makes you think that they may have made a miscalculation, unless, of course, they have other things up their sleeve going into the spring and the early summer.
Right. I would argue just on part of that, that these protests, I think, were maybe bigger than some people expected. I would say, you know, maybe I think some analysts are saying, you know, kind of big enough to kind of keep things going. But the question that you raised and that you've raised before of the timing of Navalny's return certainly stands, and for reasons that you're mentioning. Now, you mentioned the prospect of the standoff intensifying and the government being able to take other action. Now, something like that is happening as we speak. There is a hearing. A hearing going on now, as far as I understand, on the Moscow prosecutor's request to declare or designate all Navalny's organizations as extremist groups. This regards his anti-corruption foundation, a citizens' defense group, and in fact his entire network of offices nationwide. The state wants them declared extremist. And today, in a court hearing on this, apparently the prosecutors, I guess, pending a decision on the request, have suspended the activities of all these organizations, as far as I understand. So they are now, as far as I understand, again, they're now, barred, at least for the time being, from doing anything, from carrying out their activities. Rob, and we'll see how it plays out, but certainly that doesn't seem to bode well for the ruling itself. Rob, you wrote an article last week based in part on material from our Russian service and Current Time describing how members of Navalny's network across Russia are dealing with this threat. Tell us about that, please, and also about the potential consequences of the extremist designation.
Yeah, I'll start with the last part. I mean, the consequences are really devastating. Anybody who's working for taking a salary from an extremist organization can be personally prosecuted as an extremist or terrorist or whatever. And the prison sentences are very serious, 6 to 10 years, I believe, people were saying. So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect is anybody who contributes to or funds these organizations, even just very small individual donations, which Navalny is very proud of, is sort of crowdfunding. Those people are also vulnerable for all sorts of persecution, and if their names get put on lists, they could face criminal prosecution, of course, but they could also face consequences at work or at school or wherever they are. So it's definitely a very wide net under which almost anyone could fall. It's also, you have to sort of tip your hat to the Putinists in this case, because you'll remember that they passed a law requiring that in order to participate in elections, everybody had to open a certain number of regional offices and have a certain number of supporters in every region and things like that. And so that now is, they were forced to form this organization, which is now in a position to be shut down in a broad blanket sort of way. So it's by playing by the rules, they've made themselves vulnerable in this way. But when our Russian service in Current Time were talking to the volunteers and to the staffers in the regions, the universal story that they told was that, no, they're going to continue. Not a single person has expressed an interest in leaving the organization. They're prepared to take these consequences. They knew that such consequences might happen when they signed up, and it's not a surprise to them. The fact that this response was so uniform makes me a little suspicious. Maybe they sort of coordinated their response, but definitely they've shown they're courageous, bona fide, as have already been well established in all the regions. They keep going out for these protests, and they keep facing arrests and other things like that. One of the volunteers or staffers, I can't remember, made the interesting point about how the opposition in Russia is perhaps deeper than people imagine. That not only you can't really just count the number of people who come out on the street, but the people who do get arrested are finding a large network of support, of sort of quiet support under them. People giving them legal assistance, people bringing them food to jails, people helping them communicate with their relatives, that sort of thing. People who wouldn't go to protest themselves, but who are actively supporting this opposition movement and certainly are not going to go out and vote for United Russia in the elections. So I think that's an important point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just go back to another point you made about, saying I think that essentially by playing by the rules, you have to have a certain, number of regional organizations in order to take part in elections. The Navalny and his organizations, ended up being kind of hit by those rules. It's really quite quite staggering. I mean, these campaign offices, as far as I know, they were called campaign offices because Navalny was trying to mount a campaign to run against Putin in the 2018 presidential election. He was then barred by the Electoral Commission based on at least one or possibly two of the criminal convictions that he has in cases that he and supporters and Western governments, you know, say are unfounded and politically motivated. So it's kind of a convoluted sort of a you know, can't win situation, I guess. You know, you mentioned one other thing. So really, it seems like kind of a you know, Navalny was forced kind of onto the streets by you know, by being barred at least during the presidential election. But now they're trying to, you know, the government is trying to thwart efforts to protest on the streets and for his organizations to do any activity. So it's a tough situation, as you say. There's you know, months until the State Duma elections. Now another thing I wonder just about this is how it will affect, or how it might affect, again, Russia's relations with, you know, with the West and with outsiders. We have, you know, Biden has proposed a summit with Putin in the coming months. There are reports that could happen in June after Biden's trip to Britain for a G7 summit and Brussels, I believe, for a NATO and EU summit. So, but, you know, are these, I mean, obviously Navalny's health and his treatment could affect that, but also interesting to see whether, you know, this extremism case and other things that are going on will affect, you know, that and other ties between, or other actions going on between Russia and the West.
Yeah, the Kremlin is extremely skilled at painting any support that the West might give as proof that they're interfering, proof that Russia's under attack, proof that the opposition is all a bunch of foreign agents or whatever they want to call them. So it's a very tricky line for the West to go. And with the month ahead, it's pretty easy for the Kremlin to spin a lot of these things in a way that is very pleasing to the Kremlin's base.
Right. I mean, that's one audience, I guess, that will, you know, that may receive such things with, you know, with credulity. So we'll see what happens.
But there's actually two other small points I'd like to make, Steve, sure. If you don't mind my interrupting. One is that this extremism case against Navalny's organization really shows very clearly the pathetic state of federalism in Russia, that the Moscow prosecutor's office and the Moscow city court could take these actions which would affect these organizations throughout the entire country, regardless of what they think of in Khabarovsk or Krasnodar or whatever. And the other is, I think when the history of all this is written, people are going to pay a lot of attention to the outstanding success and cleverness of the smart voting strategy, how effective it was, how it was immediately perceived as a very serious threat by the Kremlin. For decades, the opposition in Russia has been debating whether or not to participate in elections at all and just sort of spinning their wheels. And finally, a very effective strategy that actually moved very fast from regional election to regional election, every year got a little bit stronger, mm-hmm. was developed. And it's under the circumstances of the authoritarian system in Russia, it's a very, very clever and effective idea.
Yeah, and I guess the, you know, what's happening now with this so-called extremism case and potential designation, you know, may be a kind of a direct result of the Kremlin taking a look at the Navalny Smart Voting Initiative and you know, thinking this is quite a threat. So we will.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Rob, thanks very much for your comments, your insights. We're running out of time. I guess we're going to have to call it a day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve. Talk to you later.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday for another look at the week ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.